From Migration Media, this is Migratory Patterns. I'm your host, Mike Shaw. As a child growing up in the predominantly white John Hughesian suburbs outside Chicago, think movies like Ferris Bueller's Day Off, The Breakfast Club, and Uncle Buck, Daphne Cheng rebelled against the expectation of her parents' native Chinese culture. But she also didn't identify with her surroundings. She chafed to taking Chinese lessons on weekends and had a rough time fitting in with the people and institutions in the area. This led to her always feeling like an outsider, neither part of her parents' culture nor fully part of America. So it's no wonder that today she's one of the incredible bridge people in China who are living connections between cultures. And far from not fitting in, she's discovered a thriving community of fellow American-born Chinese, or ABCs, who, like her, are eager to turn their mixed heritage into a powerful lever that they can use to change the world. In Daphne's case, this takes the form of advocating and popularizing plant-based cuisine in Shanghai, one of the culinary capitals of the world. Daphne's an accomplished chef, having gone to culinary school and earned her stripes by running underground supper clubs and opening up multiple restaurants in New York. Now she's bringing that energy and enthusiasm to Shanghai. It was exciting to meet Daphne, and I think she's got a really, really inspiring story. I think you're going to enjoy it. So sit back, relax, and enjoy my conversation with Daphne Cheng. Daphne Cheng, welcome to Migratory Patterns.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Where is home?
Home. That's a interesting question. I currently live mostly in Shanghai. Born and raised in Chicago, and then briefly lived in Bay Area, then moved to New York for 7 years. But every time I visit LA, that feels like home. So I very much feel like a global citizen. I think I've always felt like, even when I was a kid, I felt like countries and borders were sort of a silly sort of concept, like, you know, people fighting over like this imaginary line, like, and having wars and all that. I thought it was like, well, it's all imaginary. You guys know that, right? That concept has always been interesting. Like, I, of course, like, appreciate cultures, like, different, different cuisines and, like, traditions and all of that. But, like, why can't we all just get along as, you know, people who live on this planet? And so that was always from a very early age, something that I, like, always questioned.
So we're going to skip ahead just a little bit because I want to find out how you got from Shanghai to here, but where you started in Chicago to Shanghai. But you're kind of pushing my buttons with this answer of yours, which I'm really excited about. Yeah. So this idea that, you know, you never felt like borders mattered or they were always in your way. Do you think maybe your upbringing as a child of immigrants and then someone who their formative years ended up moving around a lot and then ended up back in the country their parents came from, do you think that maybe contributed to your not identifying a sense of identity that's coupled with a place?
Yes and no, maybe. I mean, yeah, so being raised like with Chinese parents and being Chinese in America was definitely pretty difficult. Like, as a kid, like, at this point, I have very broken Chinese, and that's because when I was younger, I refused to learn, and I didn't want to be Chinese, and I thought, you know, I was almost, I wouldn't say, like, ashamed, but definitely not, like, proud to be Chinese, and so it may have something to do with that, but...
Did you feel American?
I've always felt like an outsider, so I didn't feel American either. I didn't identify with the culture either, and so it was definitely always difficult,
So let's talk about how you got from Chicago to Shanghai. So you said you were in the Bay Area for a little while. I think you told me you went to school there, and then you ended up in New York. Mm-hmm. What precipitated your move to New York?
So New York, I moved there when I finally decided to go to culinary school. So I went to Berkeley briefly and then dropped out. And then there's a year where I was like figuring out what to do. And then finally decided, like, okay, I'm going to go commit to being a chef, and moved to New York, and then I was there for 7 years.
7 years. Mm-hmm. And you told me you were doing these dinner party things, or what do you call them?
Yeah, so it's, the concept is a supper club. So
supper club.
It's quite an old concept, but it's become, you know, a new thing again. You know, everything old is new. Where, you know, it's just these dinner parties where for my concept, the way I had it set up is I had like a loft space in Manhattan in New York, and people could buy tickets to join. So it was one long table, so everybody sat together, and then but people didn't necessarily know each other, so you can come with friends or you can come alone. So, you know, I started it originally only as like a proof of concept, trying to raise money to open a restaurant, like a proper restaurant. But then I soon like actually realized that this format was way more interesting and way more fun. And it was more of a whole experience rather than just about the food. Like, you know, at a restaurant, you could be eating and yeah, you're just with your existing friends. But, you know, what if the table next to you is like, the people are really cool, but right. You would never actually get to meet them because
yeah, restaurants are kind of living like, that way. Like you exactly, go to a restaurant yeah, and it's a nice meal and you're, yeah. But you're only with the people you're with.
Yeah. Which is yeah. A nice experience in itself, but like, it's a really cool experience to sit down with people and actually really get to have conversations. So like the thing about a dinner is that you're stuck there for like 2-3 hours. So it's not just like this very shallow, maybe like networking sort of like, oh, what can you do for me or what can I do for you? And, or, you know, who are you and what do you do? Like that kind of like bar talk or like shallow small talk. But when you're sitting down at a dinner, you actually have to get beyond that. So it's like, okay, yeah, sure. The weather's great, but like, so what are you passionate about? Like, so what, you know, what makes you, what drives you? Like, what's like interesting you right now? Like, what's exciting you right now? And those are the sort of conversations that like I live for. And yeah, so that's what really happened at these dinners. And so I fell in love with that sort of format and continued to use it to build community in New York. And so, you know, I met many, many good friends and built like a really great network in New York. And then we started also hosting other events besides dinners and, you know, more like for the entrepreneurial community, like, you know, founders and investor, you know, panel discussions and workshops and meditations, yoga class. And
all sounds like you stuff. Were doing the accelerator yeah. incubator concept before they were around a lot.
Yeah, exactly. So it's really about, you know, it starts with a community and then from there becomes an ecosystem of like really cool people and like people who can bring value to each other. So that's what I really believe in.
That's awesome. So that lasted handful of years, several years in New York. So what precipitated the move over to the parents' homeland?
Yeah, so definitely never, ever imagine I'd be living in China.
I was going to say, like, you said earlier, you didn't yeah, really have absolutely. To be Chinese.
Yeah, so definitely not on my radar. But yeah, so I ran the supper clubs for about 3.5 years. Unfortunately, had to deal with some landlord issues. So my first location, I had to move. And then the second location, I also had to close due to like some disputes and then open to restaurants. But then, yeah, the whole story is I used to have an intern who worked for me at the first location. And at the time, she was a student at NYU. But she was from Beijing. So she was working on like a blog, you know, just for fun. Like it was a vegetarian lifestyle blog. And then that actually became like a fully, you know, full blown media company in China where now she has 400,000 followers. And, yeah, really, really amazing. So, so she wrote this article about my story in New York and like what I did and, you know, the whole supper club concept and that went viral in China. And so then she invited me out here to host some dinner parties. So I came and was like, okay, yeah, cool. I'll do these events. And then, okay, I'll just go back to my life as usual in New York afterwards. So we did these dinners in Beijing, Shanghai, and Guangzhou. It was like 80 people in Beijing, 80 in Shanghai, and like 200 or something in Guangzhou or something like that. Yeah. And then it was dinners and workshops. And so when I arrived, yeah, it was pretty overwhelmed by it. It was like a really enthusiastic response and like everybody was like super excited. And so that was like really cool to see. And, but then also, you know, took a look around in China at the market and like seeing like, okay, well, here's all these people who are interested in eating healthy and like, you know, learning about it and eating and following this lifestyle. But, you know, who's actually really answering that demand? And I felt like nobody really was doing it. And, you know, there's a lot of Western style healthy concepts. And then there's kind of more like traditional Chinese vegetarian, like Buddhist style cuisine. So there wasn't really something that's like answering, you know, this demand from the younger generation. It's really the younger generations that are leading like this, you know, healthier lifestyle, and they're more conscious of like sustainability and like environmental issues and stuff. And so I just felt like within a week of being here, I decided to move here. So
the dragon seduced you.
Yeah. So
as it happens to so many of us.
I know, it's like everybody's like, yeah, I was only supposed to be in Shanghai for like 2 days, but I ended up staying like 7 years.
Yeah. I know several of those people in Beijing. Mm-hmm. They're just like, yeah, I came for a week and came on a business trip. And the next thing you know,
I mean, it's amazing. Like I really fell in love with Shanghai. And I think it's really a shame that like China doesn't have such a great reputation outside of China, right? Like in the US, the only media about China is like always negative, or it's always political, and it's always like, you know, about, you know, counterfeit stuff, or like something about the pollution or something like that. And it's never about like all the positive cultural change that's happening here, all the innovation, all the creativity. And, you know, China's really having like what I feel is like a renaissance right now. And so it's really exciting to be here, and surrounded by like, yeah, really cool people doing cool things and all the energy. And yeah, really
exciting. Yeah. I, it's a frustration that I have too, because I live here, so I have a sense of what's going on here. I don't pretend to know everything. My Chinese is pretty garbage, so I can't follow a lot of local media. But I've had conversations with people back in the U.S., actually, just when I was back on a trip recently, and they were kind of asking me about what's China like and what don't I know. Mm-hmm. And the way I said it, I kind of talked about New York. I said, imagine New York City, and imagine the only thing you knew about New York City was what was being written in one small neighborhood paper in a corner of Brooklyn. Like, that's the equivalent of what you've got in China. All the foreign media that are here, they're mostly Beijing, Shanghai, Shenzhen, Hong Kong, maybe a few people scattered in other cities, but mostly in those hubs. And there's no way they can cover everything. No. So and they're competing on their media sites with space for American coverage and then your local hometown coverage. So you're not going to get a lot. So it's a little frustrating, but it's also understandable. And I feel like it falls upon us, you and I, the people who are migrants here, to communicate back home and always let them know about what's going on, even if it's just what we're doing and our interactions. You know, we don't have to educate people on Xi Jinping thought. You know, that's we're not going to do that. Yeah. But we can let them know, hey, I'm doing this cool thing and the community here is really excited about it. And this is the kind of feeling that's in the air about this. And that, you know, lets people know that the world's a little bit bigger. Like, it's something that we know that maybe people who don't migrate aren't terribly aware of just because they don't migrate. So let's circle back a little bit. This idea of ABCs, the American-born Chinese, it's almost a trope in American culture. Right. And I know it's a trope here. There's quite a cultural thing about ABCs. Yeah. I know China actually even has a government program to bring you all back. they want people to come back and do cultural programs and then eventually come here after college and help the economy. But this idea of being an ABC, you said you were in suburban Chicago, right?
Yeah, right.
So what was difficult about that? What were the problems that you had as a ethnically Chinese person with Chinese national parents growing up in, you know, a suburb in America?
Well, so where I grew up, I was predominantly white, and so maybe like less than 1% Asian. And so, you know, just a handful of us in my class. And so that was, you know, difficult. And I went to Chinese school every Sunday as well. But I always felt like Chinese people were weird.
So, well, like, objectively, like, they are. There's 1.4 billion of them. Some of them are weird.
So, like, I hated going to school. Yeah, I refused to learn. Like, you know, at a certain point when I was younger, I could write essays and speak.
In Hanzi?
I learned traditional Chinese.
Oh.
Yeah, so I could write. But that's gone.
Yeah, sure.
Gone.
Yeah, you gotta keep with it. Well, to be fair, a lot of native Chinese, they lose it because it's all typed in.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just felt like you know, the cultures clash, like what my parents were teaching me versus what American culture was teaching me was quite opposite, really. You know, with my traditional Chinese parents, there's, you know, very, very strict, very demanding, very like, you know, you have to listen to us, so, you know, and I was, you know, by nature, a very rebellious sort of person, like not in a way where it's like I was this like bad kid acting out, like I was a straight A student, but like I just fought with my parents all the time. I was just arguing with them all the time. And so it was also a little bit interesting to kind of grow up in sort of a household that Asian families are less, you know, emotional and affectionate. And but then, you know, seeing...
Try being Boston Irish Catholic.
Yeah. Yeah. So then seeing like friends and then their families and there's like, everyone's like happy and hugging. And it's like, what is that?
Yeah.
Like, I have no idea what that is. It's just really foreign to me. So like, I have always felt just sort of like this conflict. And, but you know, at this age though, you know, I'm totally happy with, you know, being at ABC. Like, I think it's really like, especially right now, it's a really special thing to have both cultures and to be able to go back and forth and like, you know, sort of, you know, I'll always be a foreigner in China because of my language and, you know, some of the culture. Like, I understand the culture, but I don't always agree with it, so I don't always like it and, you know, certain aspects of it.
But you and the culture have issues.
I mean, with American culture as well. So, like, but then, you know, being here made me appreciate parts about American culture that I had probably taken for granted, such as, like, you know, people are so positive and full of energy and, like, you know, outgoing and, like, you know, fun to be around. And so I, like, miss a lot of my friends who are more like that versus, you know, Chinese culture is, like, more reserved, and which is what I am naturally. Like, so it's really interesting to come back here and then also feel like, you know, I was a very shy kid and like, but then to come back here and feel like, oh, hey, actually I'm outgoing here. So it's like all relative.
You know, it's funny you say that. So a friend of mine, one of my closest friends, he lives here in China. I've had him on the show previously. It's funny. I talked about him very obliquely on the podcast, like, oh, my best friend from one of my best friends from college who lives in Asia. And I would tell stories about him and we had a great conversation and on a previous episode. And he talked about how he identifies, there's something almost culturally within him that is migrant. He says expat, migrant, whatever word you want to use. There's a part of him that is just intrinsically that way. And he craves being here, being out in the world outside his home context, right? And I recognize this in him after I moved overseas. So he had lived overseas a couple of times here in China, and then he went back to the US and he kind of was on a mission to, not a mission, but he was kind of on the American dream pathway in quotation marks. Mm-hmm. You know, he ended up getting the white picket fence in front of the house in suburbia with 2.3 children, the dog and two cars. He literally had it.
Yeah.
And he really wasn't happy. You know, I mean, he was happy in that he had a good life and he appreciated it, but he did not feel fulfilled.
Yeah.
And I remember after I moved and I remember looking back at him and saying, oh, I understand. He's an expat who's stuck at home, stuck in his home country.
Mm-hmm.
And what he talks about now is understanding that he has a desire to straddle both. He wants to have both.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hearing that when you're talking about you. I mean, you obviously were born of a culture
mm-hmm.
in another culture. And, you know, mm-hmm. your bridging is more profound and more intrinsic. But it sounds very similar, like a crave both. Maybe you come over here and you realize, oh, I'm American and that's great.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
you go over there and you're like, oh, I'm really Chinese and that's
yeah.
great.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I really do like it. And I definitely see myself, you know, in both places. So, yeah, the question of home is like, I feel like both are home. Like LA feels like home and Shanghai feels like home to me.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So I, you know, this is kind of jumping ahead a bit because I think about what comes next. And this is partially because of where I am in my life, my, you know, the stage of life I'm in, which is embarking on a career. I know we're going to be overseas for a while, my wife and I. And we start to think about, well, what does that mean for later in life? Like what in our home countries, we have kind of a pathway laid out for us. There is a certain way you live your life. And when you get to a certain stage of life, you have these things. You have your family, or you have your home, or you have your 401k, or you know what I mean? Your vacation home in Boca Raton, you know, whatever that you have. So one of the things I've been thinking about is, what do we, the international migrants, what's our model? You know, like, what are we living our life for? What are we working towards? Right now, I really don't know. You know, I feel like that's something we need to talk about. So, I mean, amongst ourselves as a cohort. So you have your career, and you're trying to develop it in certain ways. What do you feel like is driving you? What do you feel like you want to work towards, whether it's professionally or personally or whatever?
Yeah. So do you know the concept of ikigai?
Ikigai?
Yeah, it's a Japanese concept. So there's what are you good at? You think of this like Venn diagram.
So. Oh, this! I was about to say this sounds very organized, very Japanese.
This is what are you good at? What do you like to do? Mm-hmm. What does the world need? And what can you make money at? So the intersection of all those is your ikigai.
Ah.
And so for me, I feel quite lucky that I've found mine quite early. As a chef, I love what I do, and I get to be creative. I love like the business side of things, and like, you know, developing something and creating something from scratch, and then building it. And, you know, I love cooking, and I love, you know, cooking for people, especially, and connecting people, and, you know, creating experiences that people love. And so, I'm also mission driven. So like what I'm doing always has a purpose. So my purpose is to help people eat healthier and more sustainably, and to educate people about, you know, what plant-based eating is, and also just a better life in general. Like, so not just about food, but like about, you know, your physical health, your mental health, you know, through mindfulness or compassion, or just being human, better humans in general. So my company name is Superhuman. So it's all about just, you know, think of like self-actualization. So like, how do you become the best version of yourself? But like doing it in a way that makes it really fun, makes it really cool. So like our branding is like, you know, it's got like a hip hop, like streetwear meets like fashion like vibe. So that's very much in line with like what's going on in like culture these days. And so we're very much like targeting this younger millennial generation and beyond, where we're trying to help people. Like, you know, right now the unfortunate thing is, right now in China, we're in like this consumerism stage. In the US, they're sort of moving out of that a little bit, so they're progressing a little bit more. But in China, we're still very much in, like, yeah, materialism, buy, show, mm-hmm, and, like, mm-hmm, all that. And so, like, you know, I kind of want to help.
I know there's a talk that there's some rumblings that in the culture right now, yeah, about, you know, not spending quite so much, not buying what you need. Like, but it's very
the
nascent.
Buddhist youth.
Yeah, very
like
nascent.
They call themselves.
Yeah, the Buddhist youth, right.
Yep. Yeah. So, but that's, like, a very, very, very tiny little piece. And, but you're seeing that, and so that's really good to see. And we'd love to help move that forward.
So you talked a little about plant-based eating, plant-based cooking. We didn't say this, but you are vegan, right?
Right.
So that's not like a... We're not stamping it with a scarlet letter.
Yeah, I just don't like to use the term because it's like very polarizing.
I'm the same way. Also, my wife, God's lover, my wife, she has said to me straight up, she goes, I know vegans who, if I introduced you, I could not introduce you as vegan, because I'm not like a passionate animal activist, mm-hmm, you know, I'm very much environmental. I call myself a math vegan.
You know? Vegan.
Yeah, I'm a math vegan. It takes a X amount of land to support cows, and, you know, you want to produce this much, and Y amount of water, and if there's not enough planet,
it's
very simple. It's math.
Yeah, it
doesn't matter what you like to eat. It's just math. Mm-hmm. So I'm interested in, you know, you were in New York. When did you turn vegan, first of all? When did you go plant-based?
I became vegetarian when I was 12. Uh-huh. vegan when I was 14.
Vegan? Wow. Yeah. Since 14. Damn.
Yeah.
I'm like going on 4.5 years. Yeah. I got nothing on you.
So it's, more than half my life now.
Wow. So. That's fantastic. So, when you went to New York, how much of your being a chef is driven by your desire to promote plant-based food?
100%.
100%, really?
Because I got into food when I became vegan. So, like, I started, that's when I started cooking for myself, then realized I enjoyed it. So.
Yeah. I told you a little bit before we started recording that I very rarely have had bad food when I've gone to a vegan restaurant. And my theory about that is because it takes a little extra effort to actually construct vegan menus, especially if you're doing replacement dishes, like, you know, you're substituting one thing for another. You have to actually have some culinary talent. Mm-hmm. So the amount of work that goes into that kind of almost precludes there being, quote, bad food. There might be things you prefer, but you're very rarely going to have bad food at a vegan restaurant. So that's one of the things that I've discovered and been really happy about since I went plant-based. So in China, what kind of cuisine do you concentrate on? Or do you have a preferred kind of cuisine? Like, what do you think works well? And Shanghai is really known as a culinary destination. That's interesting in China because they're very used to foreign food here, which is a little different from other places.
Yeah. So me personally, I love all kinds of cuisine, but I especially love, like, anything with really bold and spicy flavors. Like,
oh, I love spicy.
So, like, yeah, Sichuan, Hunan, like, all of that, like... So good. Yeah, Yunnan.
Oh, really, Yunnan is the best. I love my favorite.
But for China specifically, and for this, the restaurant concept that I'm building here, I call it like modern Chinese cuisine because, yes, there's a lot of foreign cuisine here, like a lot of Western, but like in their hearts and, you know, for you as well, like you grew up with a certain kind of food. And so there's certain comfort food, right? And there's certain foods that you gravitate towards. So like, that is very true for Chinese, where they have their preferences. And so we want to be a place where people can come like daily, like if they wanted to, like it's a very like, you know, accessible sort of place where it's affordable enough and it's casual so that you can come daily and it can be like your spot, your go-to spot. And it's the menu is, you know, based on Chinese ingredients, some Chinese flavors, but then also made a little bit international. So I don't like the word fusion, but essentially fusion. And
yeah, I don't like the word fusion either. It's like...
there's a little bit of cheesiness to it. Yeah. Just because of, you know, other concepts. So I use the word...
Do you not like the word fusion because you didn't think of yourself as fusion growing up?
But no, it's definitely interesting, like, because I think food is very much a huge part of culture, and so like, you know, as if I think of myself as a global citizen, my food is also very global. I love like all kinds of cuisines, but I also love mixing them. So my style is very eclectic. It's very like innovative and unusual and sometimes like weird, like to some people, like it could be very out there.
Like, are you more like a combined dishes as opposed to combine, like, so you wouldn't do fusion in a dish, but you'd have an American dish and a Chinese dish, something like that?
I combine flavors and ingredients. Okay. So like, you know, for example, this is a cocktail that I just created, which is not food, but a similar sort of idea. So I made a cocktail that
for some people it's dinner.
Okay, sure. So it's it was like a crowd favorite. It's a Sichuan peppercorn with black rum, red date syrup. So like, you know, red dates are very like common and in Chinese cuisine, and then ginger beer. So that together, then you sort of have like this mix of, you know, flavors and cultures, and it's like something new and interesting. And yeah,
I would very much like to try that.
Like, that's like what I love to do, is like create something new that like is sort of like what I love to hear too, is like, oh, this reminds me of like, you know, my grandma's cooking, but then like, you know, there's something interesting about it. Like that, like I hear that a lot too. And like, if for something really random, like this, I just did a dinner in LA where, yeah, someone was saying, I made like a polenta dish, and they're saying like, oh yeah, it reminds me of my grandma's like I think it's like an empanada recipe or something like that. Yeah. And like, it's like shocked to hear that, but it's like, okay, cool. That, like, I love that, like, food provokes memories and it speaks to people and it's like very emotional. And so like, that's what I love. Yeah.
So when you moved over here, what was the, like, what was your entry? Like, how did you, what was your plan?
Yeah. So I didn't have a plan.
Oh. Again, like a lot of people.
Yeah. So yeah, I was here. I was like, okay, I'm moving here. And then I went back home, packed my stuff. And then within a month I came back. I knew two people when I arrived. So one of them was Hazel at Veg Planet. And then the other one was a friend that I knew in New York. And then, you know, luckily, like, they knew a lot of people and they introduced me to a lot of people. And so very quickly I was plugged in to, you know, it's quite a small community. It's like, you know, there's sort of the entrepreneurial community, there's the F&B community, there's like an artist community. And so, like, you know, right away I was like meeting all these people.
Is there an ABC community?
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So what's that like? Do you have a secret handshake?
It's cool. Yeah. I do feel the people that I most, kind of get along with are, I call it like international Chinese. So like it doesn't necessarily have to be ABC, but it's either ABC or, you know, BBC or CBC, whatever, GBC, like any other country.
The BCs.
or it could be Chinese born, but has some international like experience, like lived abroad, came back or something like that. So that's sort of what I identify with most is like a Chinese or, you know, can also be non-Chinese, but just somebody who has that kind of multicultural background.
Do you feel like that's the kind of cohort that you identify with most culturally?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So that whole idea of straddling, you know, that one, I'm over here and I feel this way, I'm over here and I feel this way. It sounds like there's a whole cohort of people, a whole community of people that just, that's the way they live. How big and how supportive is that community?
I wouldn't say it's huge, but like there's definitely a community of people who go back and forth between America and China. And there's definitely like an ABC group in Shanghai and in Beijing. And more and more people in America who come to Shanghai quite frequently for work, or even if they're still based in the US. And I think you're only going to see more and more of that. And I think that this group is going to become more and more important in the world.
I would imagine so. I mean, you're the bridge people.
Like, US and China superpowers, like, and then, you know, this group of people is, you know, it's like a key, like, yeah, this piece.
We would really appreciate if you guys could get on the whole trade dispute. If you could get on that and fix it for us.
I stay out of politics.
So I want to dig into this just a little bit because it's funny. As you were speaking, I found myself almost getting a little bit jealous. And I only say that because I think mostly it's because I'm in China and I know there's a limited amount of access I have. Mm-hmm. And even you, I know you understand that even for you, there is a limit to how deep you can go in the culture. But for someone like me, even if I spoke fluent Chinese and I lived here for 20 years, there's just this limit. I call it the Lao Y ceiling.
Yeah,
like there's just point where you are just not accepted. There's always assumptions about you.
Yeah, of course.
But this idea of being a Western born Chinese or a Chinese who's returned is this interesting window into the culture because you guys can translate it for us. You can tell us what's going on in ways that we can't ever quite understand. So do you guys have a feeling of this importance that you talked about, the fact that you are this connection, and do you see yourselves, and I'm talking about you as a group, you are the spokesperson for the group, even for yourself, I mean, you're in this community. Do you feel like there is a feeling in the community that there is this importance and that do you feel like it drives you? Do you feel like it's a mission for you to do certain things? Do you feel responsibilities?
I think more and more that like a lot of ABCs do feel a responsibility to help like change the perception of China and in America. You know, a lot of us are like, you know, sick of, you know, being the stereotypes and all that kind of stuff and the like the negative perceptions. And so like we're trying to bring, you know, this, you know, more authentic kind of culture, like the real China and like, you know, what's cool about it and like what's exciting about it and like real Chinese food to America. And you know, Asian Americans are having a moment right now because of Crazy Rich Asians and like all of the other like media and stuff that's happening. So that's like really exciting as well. So and then I do feel that also in China, there's like a growing, like, you know, finally like a sense of like national pride where it's like a healthier thing than, you know, previously there was more of like a foreign worship. Like anything foreign was like amazing and like anything Chinese was like crap. And like, so that's really sad. Like even in your own country, you feel like another culture is better than yours. I think that's really sad. Like, yeah, for me, I was in America, so it's like, okay, but being in China and feeling that way is like, that's messed up. So like, I think we're at a point where like, yeah, we're not doing that anymore. So like, we're proud to be Chinese and we have a really beautiful, rich culture. And so we should be proud of it. And like, you know, not like cocky or anything about it or arrogant or, but at least, you know, just having a sense of, you know, a sense of pride in that.
What does patriotism mean to you?
Again, going back to like thinking that countries were a little bit silly. So I think patriotism is a little bit silly, but I do like, you know, when it brings people together, when it has those positive, you know, when people, you know, stand up for something, whatever that is, if it brings you together, like that's amazing. But to be like, to be patriotic to the point where you think you're better than another country.
That's nationalism.
Yeah. Then no, that's stupid.
So do you see yourself as someone who, obviously you've touched on this, but you see yourself as someone who's going to go back and forth for the foreseeable future, kind of keep one foot in each pond?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I don't, you know, some people leave the US and they never go back and then they lose touch with their friends and whatever, but I never want that to happen. It's like, I have really good friends in New York and LA and San Francisco and I don't want to lose that. And I, yeah, like I said, I miss certain aspects about American culture and realizing that, okay, yeah, I'm definitely American and I'm definitely Chinese. And I really like the idea of balancing both and like being, cause it's, you know, being in, if I were in LA and Shanghai, it's like such a contrast in like, you know, LA sunshine, chill, like, you know, relax, beach, ocean, warmth, and yeah, everyone is so happy there. But then like Shanghai is like, you know, high energy, fast paced, like, you know, cool, creative, innovative, like exciting, and I love both. And so it's, but it's like a good balance to have both. Like you have your chill time in LA and then you got your like your hustle time in Shanghai.
It's funny, you it makes sense to me that you would really connect with Shanghai, ABC aside, but because you spent so much time in New York, I always equate Shanghai to like to New York.
Yeah, it's basically the New York of China.
Right? Oh yeah, it's the New York of China. I mean, it's almost not even a Chinese city. I mean, as New York is almost not an American city. It's kind of a city of the world.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, yeah, that's in that country. Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I really appreciate you taking the time, and I've loved exploring this idea of ABC, and it's something I'm going to make a point of having more ABCs on the show because I think for Americans, it's an easier way for, it's kind of like the marijuana of cultural exposure. It's the gateway drug. Like you make it easy for us through your conversations because you've lived the experience of being an American. You are American, right?
Yeah.
And you grew up in America, so you can relate and talk about American experiences, but you can also talk about it doing it. You can talk about doing it through the lens of someone who grew up in an Asian household, like your Asian culture. Mm-hmm. Which to me is super valuable. Like I can learn a lot about American culture through your experience.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I just want to thank you for coming in and sharing it. It's been really, really wonderful.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah, thank you so much.
Well, that was really lots of fun. I am so inspired by Daphne and all the ABCs who are coming over to China and doing such really important work. Make sure to check out the show notes. I've got links to her Instagram feed, more information about her company, Superhuman, the concept of Igikai, and also a link to the Weibo feed of Veg Planet, which is the group that first brought Daphne over to China. Remember to reach out with any suggestions or comments or questions you might have. Love to get the interview suggestions. I'm really enjoying the feedback I'm getting. Contact me at mike.shaw@migrationmedia.com.
zaxmedia.net or check out my Twitter feed at ZAX2000. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next week.